Blog Talk Radio.
On this first week of the 2015 portion of the 2014-2015 PGA Tour season. It's about that time when golfers get back to work, and we welcome in our friend from a multitude of places and websites, including Golf News Net, Yahoo Golf, and Billy Casper Golf, Mr. Ryan Ballingy. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, Jeremy. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you, too. Besides the chipping yips, any headlines pop out to you over this last month or so? It's kind of, you know, golf kind of quieted down a bit, which I give it credit for. Tiger returned. He seemed competent except for his chipping. And then things kind of quieted down.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty slow December, all things considered. But, I mean, that's to be expected. And frankly, if it wasn't quiet, I'd be somewhat disappointed after what turned out to be an 11-month golf season these years. So I'm kind of excited to get things back underway. I know it's not the perfect field for Kapalua, but most everybody's there. Four of the biggest names are not, but it's still going to be a great field. It's still golf, and I'm excited to see it get back underway.
And it's real golf, and it's for the and it's for FedEx Cup points, and who can't love FedEx Cup points in January? As we sit here right now, and you know, I've been reading a bunch of previews and headlines and storylines, and you know, we've got Tiger trying to return, Phil who's done this, you know, dropping weight and trying to gain all this swing speed, and Adam Scott and Spieth and Fowler, and the list goes on and on and on. What of all these headlines, because you've probably read the same, you know, story that I've read, which of these headlines sticks out to you most as the most interesting?
I guess it's by default Rory McIlroy, just because of the prospect, however, outside of a Rory slam if he wins the Masters and the U.S. Open. But that's months away. So I guess the short-term headline of intrigue, and still is Rory McIlroy, which is what happens with this lawsuit in Ireland, whether it ever actually gets to trial, and it seems like it's going to, because it's supposed to start sometime either at the end of this month or very early next month. What becomes of that will be very interesting. Obviously, what Tiger Woods does in his early schedule will be interesting, not only in terms of where he plays, in terms of how he produces and what he produces, and hopefully the time off, whatever that turns out to be between the World Challenge and his first start of the year, which is going to be in the United States. Whatever that improvement is in his short game is going to be really interesting to see. And then I think the third one, as you mentioned, is Phil Mickelson, who had his worst season in a decade. And Woods and Mickelson combined have their worst seasons since Woods turned professional in 1996. So what does Phil Mickelson do that he's 20 or 25 pounds lighter? Does he, I mean, he's still very long for a guy who's 44 years old. Is he even longer? I mean, is that possible? Does it mean he plays more often? Well, there's a lot of variables. And then you can throw in just kind of random bits of intrigue. Is Dustin Johnson going to turn into a responsible human being? Is Sergio Garcia, now that he's settled down, going to be a major champion? I mean, we're doing for Yahoo an 18-part preview of the 2015 season. It really wasn't that hard to come up with 18 topics. We could have come up with 25 or 30 and happily done it all month of December. So there's a lot to think about, a lot of unknowns. And for as much as you think you know about golf, it can change on a dime. And that the dominance that we saw from Rory McIlroy at the end of the year in major championships could turn out to be a fluke. And what we saw from Jordan Spieth at the end of the year could turn out to be the future. Who knows? We just don't know. And then I guess that's the beauty of a long golf season. We get a long time to see it unfold. It doesn't happen in a short time frame, kind of like the NFL.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. You're somebody who knows legal stuff a lot better than I do. You've read through a lot of this stuff. what are the realistic ramifications for Rory in this lawsuit? Because look, he's plenty rich. So I don't buy this argument that it'll hurt him in his pocket. I don't buy the argument that him and Graham McDowell will be permanently, you know, have a horrible friendship after this. I've never bought that argument from day one. What are the realistic ramifications that could happen to Rory in this lawsuit?
He could lose $10 million. I mean, ultimately, that's it. Financially speaking, it's about $10 million is the most he could probably lose on the countersuit for Horizon Sports. Other than that, it's probably embarrassment. I mean, it's public embarrassment. And I think that the representatives for Horizon have gone out of their way to use the court system, as kind of Vijay Singh's lawyers have early on in his case against the PGA Tour, as kind of a means of public relations, where the claims that they make in court, the requests that they file, the motions they file, they are all press releases. They are all, this is what we think we've got on blah, blah today. In this case, it's Rory McIlroy. And we think his father screwed over our relationship. And we think Rory screwed over Graham McDowell. And you see it time and time again. As news comes out, it's something Rory did that really has nothing to do whether he broke this contract or whether he did something that breaks that relationship that they had a legal bond to between Horizon and Rory. I think that's really the only material impact. I mean, like you said, Rory McIlroy has plenty of money, and he's going to have plenty of money. He's well on his way to a $300 or $400 or $500 million life, at least. But this might go down as something a little bit more embarrassing than he cares to have get out in the public. And I'm very curious, after each new news story, after each new development, why there hasn't been a clear move towards settlement. And even when there was mediation, court-ordered mediation by the Irish Commercial Court, there was no chance, apparently, that there was going to be some kind of resolution outside of court, some kind of settlement. So Rory must believe he has something to prove here, or he's got the goods, whatever it is. And if he's going to win, then it's worth everything going through up front and the kind of disruption that it's been to his life. I mean, he had to bow out of two tournaments, and you can argue that was kind of dubious why he actually bowed out of those tournaments. But at least he said it was to deal with this legal case. I'm not necessarily sure I believe that, but he had to put that out there as an excuse. So that's really all it is. It's a little bit of cash out of his pocket, a very deep one, and public embarrassment.
Talking with Ryan Ballinger here about our 2015 PGA Tour preview. You mentioned Dustin Johnson. It just so happens that the Farmers Insurance Open is 6 months after he took his leave of absence. There was not a suspension 6 months. Okay, we're not going to go there. Look, I think most people accept that he was suspended for 6 months, and this is some settlement that has him magically out for 6 months. He's apparently been setting course records. He looks great. He's training harder than ever. Here's somebody who is immensely talented, who should be in the prime of his career, who is about to become a father, who when he's on and mentally on the right track is as good as anybody on the PGA Tour. Do you think this year is for him, or is this going to take him some time?
I mean, I think if the way Dustin Johnson lived his life pre-suspension is any indication, and we don't know the full extent of it, so we may only know a sliver of what's really going on, and I'm going to interpret it that way, then he could pretty much play successful golf, high, drunk, hungover, sleep-deprived, whatever it is, and play great. So if that's the case, and that was the lifestyle he was leading before becoming a father, before the suspension, if he can focus his attentions on the game and being a dad, kind of cut out some of that extra stuff or shift some of the focus from that stuff to the family-type stuff, then I think he's going to be really successful. If it turns out that he's still going to drink, smoke, and all the other stuff that he did that got him suspended and got him a bad reputation on the tour and try to be a father, and try to be a golfer, that's probably going to be a disaster. So I think it boils down to, what does he prioritize? Because a human being can only do so many things, even if you're athletically gifted as Dustin Johnson is. So what faculties does he have, and can he put them to use right away? I think if he makes that transition to fatherhood just so conveniently 6 months after deciding he's going to take a leave of absence, then I think he's going to do really well, and he's got a chance to still fulfill some of the potential that we've seen from him in the past.
Looking forward here, is there a first-time major winner this year in your eyes, and if so, who is it?
I think so. I think there are going to be several. Last year was the first year, I think, since 2000 we didn't have at least one first-time, or 2001, that we didn't have at least one first-time major winner. It's kind of surprising. But I think maybe you see a Jordan Spieth breakthrough. I wouldn't be all that shocked about that. I wrote for Yahoo, I feel really bad that I hit the publish button on this, but I think Sergio Garcia's got a really good chance to win the Open Championship this year. He's got some pretty good starts at the Old Course in 2005 and 2010. He finished T14 despite a really wacky tournament with T5 and 05. And in 2000, he was T36, but, I mean, he's barely 20 years old. So I think he's got a really good chance to pull off his first major. I mean, he's going to be his only one to pull off a major championship. And then, for whatever reason, the PGA Championship whistling straight for the last two times they've produced playoffs, so that kind of leads to the opportunity for a sneaky champion, maybe. So I don't think this is going to just be a year where Rory wins the Masters and the U.S. Open and we're all kind of in awe, and then the other two things, you know, the Open and the PGA happen. I think Rory will win one. I think Spieth will win one. I could say Garcia might win one, but that's as good a guess as anybody's going to have. I do believe if Tiger can put together a short game that's respectable, he can win one. Obviously, that's not a first-time major, but it's sure resumes the conversation about him and Jack for the first time legitimately, obviously, in almost seven years. So that'll be really interesting to me. But I think there's room for a first-time major champion. There certainly is. With all the talent out there that hasn't won one yet, it's bound to happen.
As you look at this landscape, are we sitting here when you and I talk at the end of the FedEx Cup, are we looking at a landscape here where, as Jaime Diaz put it this year, this morning in Golf World, where the old guard stood, the Tiger, the Phils of the world stood, or is this the year where the youth invasion really comes? For me, I think it'll be a mix. I think we'll see old and new, and I personally think this could be one of the more dynamic in terms of range of champion seasons we've had in a while. Where do you fall on this?
I think there's room for old and new. And I think I look back toward the, I want to say it was the 2002 season, when there were something like 13 or 14 first-time winners on the PGA Tour. I forget what the official number was. But that was the 02 season. Tons of first-time winners. And they weren't all in their 20s. Some were in their 30s. Some were, I think there was even a guy in his 40s who won it for the first time. Next year was the revenge of the guard. Like, they came back and won in spades. And even when Tiger wasn't playing his best in 03, and obviously 04 wasn't very good, but in 03, it was still a year for the old guard to kind of reassert themselves. So I think that's still possible. And I also think the generations overlap a little bit longer now. I think they'll continue to do that in going forward in golf because technology allows guys to extend their career. Fitness allows guys to extend their career and relevancy. So Phil Mickelson at 45 doesn't seem all that old. Chip Kirk seems old. They're the same age. But Phil Mickelson doesn't seem all that old. And so I think fitness and equipment allow guys to legitimately play until they're 50 or older. There's just going to be, what, 9 50-year-old guys plus guys playing in the Sony Open. I know they're doing it for the trip to Hawaii, but they're eligible. So I think that's part of it. And the other part of it is young guys can succeed sooner. And we're seeing that with Jordan Spieth, with Rory McIlroy. We're seeing at least the potential for that with Ricky Fowler. We're seeing it with, to a degree, with Jason Day. And I think that makes the possible winners for any big time event way bigger than it used to be. And that's why it's so difficult for Tiger to pick up a 15th major, among other reasons. But I think that that means, because there's so many possible champions, there's so much talent from early 20s to late 40s, there has to be a mix. It can't just be dominated by one or the other. It just isn't going to play out that way. It's just the law of averages. So I think there's got to be some kind of, I'm not going to call it a stand because they're not done, and I'm not going to call it a charge because they're just getting started. It's just a kind of really nice, heterogeneous mix of ages going on the PGA Tour right now and talent level to boot. So I think it'll be really intriguing, but I don't think there's going to be one dominating age demographic.
Ryan Ballingy from Yahoo and Billy Casper Golf and all the other places that you can find his great work. Thanks, as always, for coming on Teeing It Up, and we will talk to you as the season progresses.
Thanks, Jeremy. Happy New Year. Talk to you soon.
Yep, thanks. We are going to transition in 30 seconds from golf to baseball. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schoen.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
A couple weeks ago, I received, I think it was from Mike Silverman before he came on, either last week or the week before, that I hadn't talked enough baseball on this show. So while yesterday was obviously a big day when it came to football and the moving on of Dallas and of the Colts, and on Saturday of Baltimore and of Carolina moving on, I do want to touch on baseball and make sure that this wild period of free agency that we've gone through, does get touched on, because if we don't, then we have remissed it and we'll be in training camp. Instead of doing team previews, we'll be doing other previews that don't belong. We'll be recapping instead of previewing, and that's not what any of us want to do. So we're waiting on T.J. Harrigan to join us, who will talk about that with him momentarily. While I do have this minute, what I will bring up is that the Jets right now are trying to hire a coach and a GM, and they seem to be doing a whole lot of interviews and not really announcing anything in terms of hires, which is perfectly fine, and the Jets will get their guy at some point. And then, being patient is the prudent way, and that's, the way that they should go about it, and hopefully it leads to a championship. And with that, we welcome in Thomas Harrigan, editor at MLB.com. Hello, sir.
Hello, how's it going?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good.
Before I get to baseball offseason, it was either Christmas Day or Christmas Eve, and I'm sitting there, and I saw a golf fantasy request come across my screen, which happens because PGA Tour season ramps up this week. Is anybody out there interested in fantasy baseball yet, or are people still trying to make up for their losses from fantasy football?
I think people are starting to prep for the season. The more hardcore fans, I think, are starting to prep for drafts and everything. But I think, the majority of the fantasy baseball playing public will be, it kind of ramps up around once the teams actually report to spring training. So.
And speaking of spring training, it happens right after the Super Bowl. Right now, this second, your Super Bowl pick for a matchup is?
I can't see anyone beating New England, and then in the NFC, I can't see anyone going into Seattle either. I think it's going to be New England-Seattle.
And the winner of that game is?
As much as I hate to say it, I think the Pats are going to win this year.
It'll be their year. They've obviously, you know, played it at this high level. After that Kansas City loss, they've played at a very high level all the way through. You could be right, and I'm with you. I don't see anybody going through Seattle either to win there. All right. Baseball offseason, it's still going because Max Scherzer hasn't signed anywhere. Does that surprise you, by the way, that Max Scherzer has not signed anywhere?
No, I mean, he's probably just – he knows he can wait and get – I'm sure he's getting offers. He knows he could see what these other guys are getting, and he knows he's just as good. And James Shields is out there too, don't forget.
And obviously whoever picks up either of those guys will be very thankful that they do. I would argue the best pickup of free agency could be Joe Maddon as Cubs GM. If you count coaches, managers with players, who's your best pickup so far this offseason?
That could be a huge difference maker. Otherwise, between him and Lester going to Chicago as well could really give that team a jolt because they have a lot of young position playing prospects, but their pitching prospects aren't as highly touted. So those two moves could really put that team, super drive their rebuilding period and possibly even contend this year. Who knows?
All right. Besides Lester, besides Maddon, best pickups of this offseason?
Let's see. I mean, there are some more under the radar ones that I like, as Drubal Cabrera and Adam LaRoche signing with the Rays and White Sox respectively. David Robertson, I think, was a good move for the White Sox to pick him up because they had their bullpen was so terrible last year and they couldn't get their closing situation right. And it was a lot of money, but he brings a lot of stability, a lot of strikeout ability. And, I think obviously whoever lands Scherzer could be the big winner of the whole offseason.
As you look at worst pickups or maybe better put, worst players leaving, I thought the Yankees, who have obviously have become a smaller market team in terms of their moves, made a mistake in not signing Robertson in addition to Miller. Where do you think about, A, that move for the Yankees, and B, the Yankees overall, who have kind of plotted their way along, making a bunch of smaller moves and not big splashes in the pond?
Well, I mean, I just don't think they could have afforded to – I mean, obviously they could afford anything to the Yankees, but I don't think they wanted to put that much money into – the bullpen when they already have Betances for relatively cheap, and then you compare him with Miller, and then they made up the other guy, Carpenter. They got it throws pretty hard too, so that's why I think they wanted to go lefty righty. I would have liked to see Robertson back as a Yankee fan, but I can understand why they went in the direction they did. And it is interesting that they're going with a lot of under-the-radar moves. I think it's, in terms of that, I think it's they might be just be biding their time waiting for some of these bigger contracts to pass before they can actually really contend.
Looking at it from a larger perspective, what other moves this offseason made you sit there and go, wait a second, why did they do that?
A couple of the moves like Boston made, I mean, they went with Hanley and Pablo Sandoval. I could have seen them just picking one of those guys instead. They have a lot of depth. I mean, they ended up trading Cespedes for Rick Porcello, who's a nice back rotation arm. But I think Cespedes has more potential to be a difference maker. So they kind of made a lot of big splashes. But I don't know what direction they're actually going to go in. They have a lot of. I think they still have a move on the table, the Red Sox. So I mean. More so the Hanley deal. They signed him, and now they're moving him to left field. He's not even going to be their shortstop. So moving to a less impact position in left field. He hasn't been able to stay healthy. So that move kind of made me scratch my head a little bit.
Talking to TJ Harrigan from MLB.com, MLB.com about the Major League Baseball offseason. Did the Giants make a mistake? Because obviously, look, won the World Series. Bumgarner was sensational. They've got some pieces that they have to move looking forward financially. Do you think they made a mistake not bringing back Pablo?
No, I don't think it was a huge mistake. The guy is who he is right now. I don't think he's going to get much better than he is. And, you know, there's always a chance he gets worse because if his weight fluctuates, he's obviously a great clutch player, and they're going to miss that. But I don't know if they – I think they've seen they can cobble together rosters and compete anyway in the postseason, especially when you have a guy like Bumgarner. So I don't blame them for not, you know, throwing all that money at him.
As we look forward here, Madison Bumgarner, I think, was a player that guys who watch baseball each and every day knew was a solid pitcher, but then he takes the step up and now he's the SI Man of the Year and he's getting all this, you know, bigger national spotlight. Who in your eyes, and I know that off the top of your head this can be tough, but who in your eyes do you think is ready to make that big next step from a guy baseball addicts respect to a guy who will be larger sports public respect?
That's a good question. Caught me on the spot here. maybe so much as a guy like, you know, a Josh Donaldson, maybe. Obviously a lot of people that follow the game closely every day know the guy's a superstar already in terms of he brings a bat and a glove aspect. But I think in Toronto we're really going to see him put up huge numbers in terms, and then really start competing for an MVP if they can push it to the next level, that team. So I think he could be a guy that the casual fans really like find to come to see how good he is this year.
Talking with Thomas Harrigan about Major League Baseball. Did the Mets do enough just signing Michael Kadire?
No, I don't think so. But they could have the pitching to contend anyway, honestly. I don't think they will, but I don't think they'll actually make the playoffs. But I think if Harvey comes back and is anywhere close to the pitcher he was a couple of years ago, I think they can, and then they still have some young prospects ready to come through, so they could. I mean, Kadire, I don't think he's going to be as good away from Coors Field, but he's still a solid bat, and they need Juan Lagares to continue to hit and continue to progress as a hitter. They need Duda to just keep up what he did last year. I don't know if they're going to have enough offense to make it, though. I think they need another move offensively.
So many people think that baseball is a dying sport, or maybe not dying, but it's no longer America's pastime, blah, 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 blah. But I would argue, and have argued for a long time, that in markets where the teams are good, you can see the passion. And somebody like the baseball website, you see that passion every day. Do you think this is a year, as we've seen parity take over baseball and teams like the Pirates and the Royals continue to become better and go from has-beens to the current teams. Do you think this is a year where the total baseball calculus, the total population that engages with the sport every day increases?
I think it's weird how the sport has become. It's become so regional in comparison to the NFL, where people follow their own team and they get behind their own team. Like you said, when a team is good in that region, people get behind them, and it's as popular as ever when teams are good. It's just hard to get people following the sport nationally for some reason, as much as the NFL is followed so nationally. People follow other teams just as much as their own. But yeah, I mean it's still extremely popular in a regional sense, I think.
Final thing, the year that the Knicks will next be good is.
I don't even have that answer for you. I'm sorry. I don't even think Phil Jackson, Carmelo, I don't think anyone has that answer.
I'm guessing 2024.
Yeah, I mean, who even knows with their draft pick situation? They'll probably trade more of their draft picks, and it could be even longer than that.
You never know, knowing the Knicks. You never know.
Thomas, you never know.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on Teeing It Up.
All right, no problem. Take it easy.
Thanks for you all for listening. We'll see you Saturday for the NFL Sunday Sprint Playoff Edition with Luke. Have a great week, everybody.